Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Danielle Sullivan here, just popping in real quick to let you know that Neurodivergent Coaching's first workshop of the year is happening very soon on Friday, January 19th at 2 p.m. Mountain Time. It's called Tension Tactics. It's all about coping skills. You'll learn about all four major types of coping skills that humans use throughout the world. You'll be supported to identify your personal coping skill style, the ways you handle stress, and also to assess whether they're working for you or not. And then we'll also be going through ways that you can adjust your coping styles to help you handle stress better, help you have a better life, and help you have longer-term well-being. If this sounds good to you, please go down below, click on the link. The link will give you $5 off. We also have sliding scale available for folks from traditionally marginalized populations. If you are BIPOC, if you're neurodivergent, if you're queer, just email us and let us know, and we can get you in. Thanks so much. Hope to see you there. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the Neurodiverging Podcast. My name is Danielle Sullivan, and I am your host. I'm very glad you're here today. Welcome back. If you have a moment, please take a second to subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're currently on, or hit the like if you're on YouTube. We really appreciate it. It helps folks find us and learn more about neurodivergent issues. Today, I'm really excited to welcome Charlie Ocean to the podcast. Now, this is a part one of a two-parter, so we'll have Charlie visiting us this week and next week for some really great discussions. Today's discussion is on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Charlie has been a LGBTQT+ speaker, trainer, and consultant for a ton of nonprofits, businesses, employee resources groups, helping professionals. They have a master's in social work, and they have been training for many, many, many years other people on how to be allies to the larger queer community. It is their life's work. And because of their social work background, they also really love connecting with people and working for better advocacy and allyship. So today, on today's conversation, we're talking a lot about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging efforts, especially around queer identities, LGBTQ+, AI, everybody, however you want to frame that. Different places in the world use different terms. So insert term of your experience here. Before we dive into our interview with Charlie, I would like to thank my patrons and welcome to everyone who's joined us recently. It's been wonderful to see you all over on the Patreon at patreon.com/neurodiverging. You can throw a couple bucks a month into the pot, and that supports our ability to create the podcast, to pay for transcription, and it supports our sliding scale clients. So we really appreciate your support. If you join the Patreon, you can get perks like ad-free podcast episodes, access to our weekly Get Stuff Done group, which is an accountability body doubling support group to achieve things, and a lot more perks. So please check us out at patreon.com/neurodiverging. And here's our interview with Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. Welcome to Neurodiverging Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like that's a really tough question to answer nowadays, only because I like to try to be as honest as possible. But, you know, a lot of folks in the United States just ask to be polite. So it puts me through a spiral. But I will say today, I think I'm doing okay. But there's a lot of heaviness with everything going on in the world right now. But how about yourself?
There's a lot going on in the world today. And, you know, I'm glad you called me on it, because I think that despite doing a lot of training on neurodiversity friendliness and saying, do less small talk, I still fall back on the small talk when I'm starting off an episode, just because it's like those get to know you questions, right? That how do you get to know folks? How do you get to know what people are interested in and what's on, like, carrying them today or on their shoulders today? So yeah, I'm also okay. I am a little tired, to be frank. And also it is during this cloudy, rainy fall thing outside my window, which is messing with my energy a little bit. But it's fine. We will move forward. It's okay. I have some coffee.
You can send it my way.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's not really possible, but if it were,
if
you could Dropbox it to me, I'd happily take your weather. Yeah.
I'm near Boulder, and we have the I don't know the word, the luck, the privilege is really what it is, to get 300 days of sunshine a year. And I have gotten very used to it. And when I lived in Philadelphia, it was cloudy and rainy all the time, and it was fine. But now I'm completely spoiled. So,
well, see, it's really easy for you to send it to me, because I'm just down in Denver.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's right. I forgot you were so close.
Yeah,
that's so funny. Okay. And it's nice in Denver. It's really like an hour away.
It's supposed to rain here today. Oh, too. Okay. So it's
we just have it now, and it's going to come down.
Yeah,
to
but
you.
I'm happy to, like, just keep it coming. So I'm, like, happy. And maybe I listened to, like, garbage too much in my youth, like Only Happy When It Rains and stuff. But, like, it's a good song. Love that band. And yeah, I don't know. I like it. Probably because I feel like it better matches my mood most of the time. And also it's just, like, really calming sensory wise, because I've noticed the more I'm understanding about my neurodivergence, like when I go outside and it's super bright, I hate it. And I'm actually going to have to get proper sunglasses again, which is going to suck, because I have to get prescription-based ones.
Those are frustrating.
I think I need to do it. Yeah, because I'm starting to get these, like, ocular migraines from the light, and it's not good. So yeah, bring the rain, bring the cloudiness. I don't want it always, but I do enjoy it, and it's a nice sensory experience for me.
I get migraines from the pressure shifts when it moves from the sun to the rain. So I think I have this inverse experience. Oh, okay. Yeah. Where the light doesn't bother me. I'll wear regular sunglasses, but I wear contacts. So, whenever there's a big shift,
it just depends how much it drops.
Yeah. It knocks me down for a couple of days. So what I would love to just start with is I know you do, I was going to say DEI training, and then I realized that lots of folks probably don't know what that is. Diversity, equity, inclusion. Sometimes with a B at the end, belonging, especially around gender, sexuality, et cetera. I wondered if we could just talk about that a little bit and let us know a little bit about what you do, why you do it, how you got into it, any of that you'd like to talk to us about.
Sure. Thank you. What's interesting and funny to me is that just the initialisms or acronyms for DEI work is hysterical. It's like the same problem we have with, like, the alphabet soup community.
Absolutely.
Just, like, there's so many, because there's JEDI, and I know a lot of people like that because the J is for justice. But yeah, I just think having those similarities is really funny when you're in this intersection. But that aside, yeah, I started out as a speaker. I was a very shy and awkward kid. I'd say I'm still very shy and awkward, but somehow, like, I can do training and speaking. And so I was very passionate as a young person growing up about different things, like the environment and people getting along and stuff like that. But it wasn't until ninth grade I started to actually learn about the LGBTQ+ community and go, oh, these are my people. Because previous to that, all I had was, like, tomboy. And I clung to that identity because it was the language my bullies gave me, but it also just felt like people got me better. And basically, by the time I was nearing, like, getting out of high school, I started realizing that, and I was fortunate in some ways to grow up in Los Angeles, but I realized, you know, there was, like, this 11th grade English class I was in. I remember that one of the students, and I'll never know who, somehow we got on the topic of gay authors, which was pretty progressive, and especially for, like, the early 2000s, even though it was LA. but we got on the topic of gay authors, and I just remember hearing a student say, like, being gay is a choice. And again, I was shy, awkward, baby Charlie, and I like found my voice that day. I just remember going, no, it's not. And then I started talking about everything I experienced so far with starting to piece together who I was. Now, I didn't quite have all of the language yet, because I was mostly focusing on like the sexuality parts of it and not so much like who am I to those folks and gender and all that. So I still was clinging to the tomboy, but yeah, I was like really starting to get immersed, and like very quickly, I'm talking like literally as soon as I started learning about the LGBTQ plus community, I became like a keynote speaker for this conference called Models of Pride that's for LGBTQ plus youth. I ended up joining their board and helping to organize it every year. Like I'm talking, I just like went deep. Like I found like my special interest finally. So yeah, I nerded out over it. So by that point, like I'd learned enough that I, of course, didn't know everything, and I would still never claim that I do even now, but I knew enough to say like, no, it's not. And I know that that day I gave like a very passionate speech about like what I'd experienced so far as a young person, and even up to just that point for only knowing who I was with that particular language for a few years. But I know that my main point of that speech was like being gay or whatever term you want to use there isn't a choice. It's just, it's whether you can be authentic or not. And sometimes we don't have that choice. And that's something I can say more easily now, because again, I didn't have all the language then. But yeah, I just had a very passionate plea. It was interesting because the teacher just sort of sat back and like let things happen, because like it seemed like she knew I had it or something, even though I didn't know that I had it. And like to this day, Mrs. Roth lives up in Oregon. Like she says it's like one of her favorite moments in her career, you know, like watching me grow in that way. And so we've been very close and we keep in touch and everything. And I was so grateful she let me have that moment, because I do think it was really important. So I think from then on, I just sort of realized in any class that if we did happen to talk about the LGBTQ plus community, usually we didn't go very far. And if it did come up in some sort of like more organic way, the teachers or later the professors just like never really knew how to talk about it. So I started community organizing by my high school year. I became the president of the what was the Gay Straight Alliance at the time. Now they're usually called a Gender Sexuality Alliance or a Queer Club or something. But yeah, so then I started doing even more leadership. And by the time I got to college, I became a regular speaker for almost every class I was in. Like I've been on my own midterms and finals. Like it's been wild. And so I became a regular speaker for a lot of these different courses, like human sexuality, psychology, you name it, all sorts of different kinds of classes. And yeah, I was really finding my groove. And it was interesting because at that point I was just heavily leaning on speaking and storytelling, which was cool. But at some point after like, I don't know, 10 years of doing it, I started realizing like, I want to make this a little bit more formal and actually give people more specific concrete tools and like guidelines and things. And so I started transitioning away from sharing my story, and like, I'll still weave it in sometimes, but I feel like people need like those tangible, like, here's what to do, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, at first it was really hard to start being, I guess, what you would call gay for pay, but you know, cause there were just so many speaking engagements. Right. And they'd be like, oh, but you'll get all this exposure. And I'm like, that's cool, but I also have to pay bills. Yeah. So, you know, I took on a lot of free gigs, especially just to get the experience, but you know, and sometimes professors, especially, they'd be so kind and try to give me like a $5 to $10 Starbucks gift card or something. But again, that like wasn't enough, but I appreciated they were trying to do that, because I know they were working with a limited budget, the schools didn't want to pay for it, etc. So yeah, so then it became hard to like have to turn those down and then like only pursue people who wanted to pay me, even if it wasn't a lot to start. But yeah, I started having like nonprofits hire me, social workers, all sorts of kinds of people, to just talk about like how they can be more like culturally competent in this area, which no one can like quite master that per se, but at least like to embrace the cultural humility of it and keep that thread going and continue to learn. So yeah, I became like a regular trainer for different places. And, you know, I still do it now. It's just like, I would just say that it's gotten a lot harder, because I think in 2020, with the murder of George Floyd and having that be so public and having people start to be awake to more issues that maybe don't impact them, but like people they work with or people they know, et cetera. You know, a lot of these companies, I think, felt pressure to start pursuing DEI or that kind of work. And I think a lot of them were just like scrambling to figure it out. And they made these big, bold claims and statements that they were going to, you know, commit to doing this work. They were coming up with like their like statements and everything that they're posting on their website or whatever. But I think some of us that have been doing this work kind of saw through that and knew that a lot of it was performative and like the pressure because like the world was watching and like also employees were asking for it and starting to question. But now, I mean, the economy has changed in such a way that there's just been so many layoffs and that same energy isn't happening. And it's a shame because like when you are having to downsize and you are having to make the most of your budget, I mean, one of the most important things to me that should be core in any sort of organizational structure is professional development. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Because if we can't work together, if we can't work through our differences or see how that's good, that's a good thing to have. So we're not just like a bunch of yes people and doing status quo. Like we need to be disruptors in good ways, you know, then yeah. So I think these companies that now are starting to like take their foot off the pedal of this work, I think they're going to see very quickly that their bottom line is going to go down, that they're going to have a lot of people leaving also by choice, just because they're not keeping up that same energy. And also it's just going to hurt them across the board in terms of profits, in terms of turnover. I mean, gosh, I mean, I imagine this number is higher, but I know around like a little over 30% of turnover is experienced by LGBTQ plus employees because those companies aren't like speaking out. They aren't doing something. They're letting their coworkers misgender them or things like that. They don't have programs in place. And I imagine that's higher, but also because they don't feel comfortable going to HR and saying like, I'm being discriminated against or whatever's happening too, because like the burden and proof and all that. So, but that's why you need these things, is so that you're not in those situations in the first place. So I think they're going to find they're trying to cut costs now, but it's just going to be more costly in the future because even something like, again, around 30% of LGBTQ plus folks having turnover, I mean, that's expensive because not only is it like costly to find new talent and to replace those folks, but also there's like lost knowledge.
Yeah.
So I hate to make it about the bottom line. It feels really gross, but it also is hurting the bottom line.
That's
so.
How you speak to a company though, right? Like, because you and I can be like person-centered and wanting to develop our individual folks towards their best self-authenticity and well-being. But a company is always going to look at, well, how is this going to make us the money? But I've had a similar experience from the neurodiversity side of doing some neurodiversity centered DEI. And there is, of course, a huge crossover between neurodivergent folks and queer folks, LGBTQIA folks. And the types of the movement you're talking about people leaving, people not feeling confident speaking to HR, HR maybe not even having the training they need to create programs and respond appropriately to issues. It affects, I guess that it's it's affecting more than one population, right? That there are plenty of non-queer neurodivergent folks, there's so many that have both of these identities that are also being affected. And so not doing this kind of training and support for DEI in one population can have vast effects on everybody in the whole group. That wasn't the most beautiful way I could have said that, but hopefully you know what I mean.
I mean, I was literally talking to an ERG, so an employee resource group leader, last night on a call, and I mean, they were telling me that they just don't feel very secure and confident, because what companies are trying to do is like have it in-house.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, if you're willing to step up in this role and we don't have to pay you, right? Which there should be bonuses. And that's kind of stuff's been published on LinkedIn before, including like some of the amounts that are suggested as an example. But yeah, and you can't put that pressure, you can't put that burden on the employee. And that's part of it too, is like, my background's also in social work. I got my bachelor's and my master's. And of course, that makes sense. It's probably the most autistic thing I've done to date, is try to understand people and systems and how to change them for the better. But I empathize, because even when I've been at queer organizations, even when, like, regular nonprofits, like, I became that tokenized person, and I had to do like all this in-house training for free, mostly just to make my piece of my day-to-day easier. But I should have absolutely been compensated for that. It's additional work I was taking on. And I think there's ways to like navigate that. But yeah, especially if I wasn't like moving into like a different position or something because of that work or whatever. Yeah, it should have still been acknowledged in that way. So, but again, I did those things because it helped me to have like, to not have all those like one-off conversations. But yeah, putting that additional pressure, I'm not saying don't have like leadership positions and stuff for those employees who want to do something like that, but don't grossly take advantage of them and expect them to do your LGBTQ+101 or your ADHD 101 or whatever that's going to look like, because it's just like an unfair burden to put on those employees. And I think honestly, it hits different sometimes when you take really serious issues like this and you bring in someone from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It shows that the company is paying attention to it in a way that it may not if you just sort of grab Susan from down the hall and say, okay, do this, you know?
Yeah.
That having, and give them that a budget. External, please give them
even
a budget.
Even if you can't. Yeah. Even if you can't quite do that yet for whatever reason, then at least give them the budget as much as possible to try to do more, whatever that looks like, more social activities, whatever, so that like something's happening. But again, those budgets are getting slashed too.
Yeah, they are. I recognize that you're being called to offer training to a huge variety of different groups of people with different needs and different gaps. Are there spaces that you feel people need the most education? Like, is it people need language for, do people need consciousness raising in terms of understanding that diversity of gender and sexual expression exists? Do people need, you talked about tools in terms of maybe how to gender people correctly, or tell me more about like, what are the gaps that you're seeing, if there are any patterns in all of these trainings that you've done?
I think every place is going to be different. And what I tend to see are, again, the performative companies and corporations that are like, oh, if we hire you to do this like 1 hour training on pronouns, we're good. And I'm like, you're not though. Like, and I'm going to tell you that you're not good, and we'll do it anyway, because I need to like, again, keep a roof over my head and all of that. But like, it's not going to be enough, because okay, you follow that like pronouns thread. Pronouns are like a Trojan horse, but in the best way, because like, you're not just launching that, but like, think about it. If you have employees coming to you that are trans and non-binary and saying, I want to transition on the job, if you don't have a workplace transition plan, you're going to be stumbling last minute, awkwardly going, oh shit, how do we like help this person? Oh gosh, we needed this yesterday. What are we going to do? And they're scrambling, there's panic. So like, you know, HR department needs to have like its own workshop, and like HR business partners need to be trained mostly on like, they don't need to like necessarily understand. I'd say, I don't think you need to understand anyone to like treat them with the bare minimum respect. However, they need to be trained specifically in, cool, if you're offering and you're realizing that LGBTQ plus employees need certain kind of benefits and they're going to want to talk about them, then you're going to need to be trained on how to have those conversations. Right. You can't just like have someone put time on your calendar and be like, so do you want a sex change? Like that's not the vibe. You can't do that, right? Or you shouldn't do that. So you want to be able to lead them. But if you have a workplace transition plan, I mean, they're going to be so impressed with you, because it'll be almost everything that you've thought of, that, okay, maybe I want my manager or my supervisor to tell the department or the team on my behalf. This is when I want like this to be announced or to start more visibly living as this particular gender, whatever that mm-hmm. is. And then figuring out all the pieces, like, do we need gender neutral restrooms? What is that going to look like? How do we like talk about those things? Do we have anti-discrimination like clauses? I mean, again, like you have to sometimes scare these companies and places with either the numbers or also legal stuff, yeah. because like New York City, for example, has a law that says you must use the name, title, and pronouns of an employee regardless of whatever is on their documentation. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to then need to know and need to like network and coordinate with IT where all the legal name versus the name mm-hmm. has to be. There's only very specific, like a few very specific people who need to know the legal name, mostly for things like benefits or payment, right? Things mm-hmm. like that. But almost everyone else like doesn't need to know whatever's like actually on the documentation. So like, yeah. how do you make sure that, yeah, only the people who need to see it are on that need to know basis. And then if someone wants to make that change again, at some point, you know, once they're already at a place, like what are all those things that need to happen? So like, I try to explain, like, you need to buy this bigger package and we need to do all this work so that you're up to speed. And then like, you're good to go. There's like an intranet page that like has all of the information. Leadership and management have had a separate training so they know all of the changes to come, what their responsibilities are and where to send employees. Employees get like, you know, their all staff training. So it's the 1 hour one they're alluding to where everyone again is understanding like this is a cultural shift we're making. Cause like then you forget too, like marketing needs to say, because if you're adding as simple as email signatures and you know, updating it to include pronouns or business cards, marketing wants to say, because those are external communications. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want it to be formatted a certain way and make decisions. Like, you know, sometimes when you get those emails in parentheses, it might say like, what's this question mark? And yeah. there's a link sending you somewhere. All of those decisions need to be made. And it can't be like last minute in a panic because an employee is finally coming to you. You need to understand, especially with like Gen Z and stuff coming your way, they're already here. They're there. Mm-hmm. It's just like they probably don't feel comfortable telling you because they've maybe seen how you've like, you know, done other things yeah. and awkwardly stumbled through those, or maybe even just like decided not to address those things, which would yeah. be even worse. So
yeah,
it's like a bigger picture. So like it, depending which thread you're trying to pick at, I mean, yeah. So I'd say like certain people absolutely do need like those definitions and stuff. But so when we're doing that pronouns training for all staff, right, then we're getting into the specifics of you are going to make mistakes. Let's just normalize this right now. You mm-hmm. are. I don't want that to stop you from actually practicing allyship, though. Mm-hmm. So like, here's what to do, like in the moment, if you misgender someone by accident, here's what to do if you've made a series of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Here's what to do if someone's told you they're going by a specific name and pronouns now, like here are follow-up questions for them, but not in a way to bombard them. Like here are all the little things. And then like, once people can have those anchors, I feel like they do so much better because oh, yeah. I think it's gotten to the point where like, because of the rise of things like cancel culture, people are just afraid of saying anything and then they mm-hmm. just shut down. So they're just not even engaging at all because they're worried, well, if I don't call Charlie and I call them by their former name, or if I use he by accident, I'm going to get canceled. And it's like, no, that's not how that works. And, you know, we do want to hold ourselves and others accountable. And also there's like, again, tools and stuff for that. Like I literally yeah. 2 years ago created a flow chart for what to do if you or someone else makes a mistake mm-hmm. with misgendering someone or misnaming someone. And the last thing I'd say to that is it also includes a component of consent, because mm-hmm. you don't want to correct on other people's behalf without their consent. Cause sometimes the employees just don't want to, I don't know, I guess cause a ruckus or something, or they want to fly under the radar and not make a big deal out of it. Or maybe they'd rather themselves do the correcting or whatever that looks like, but mm-hmm. you know, you want to give them that opportunity. And there's always ways to like follow up with them later, like after a meeting, be like, hey, you know, can I talk to you really quickly about that meeting? Like, I just wanted to check in. Like, I noticed so-and-so like used a different name and pronouns for you. You know, would you like me to correct them? Would mm-hmm. you like me to correct other people in the future? Whatever, yeah. you know, and that kind of stuff is like just incredible, because it's just so much emotional labor and saying things like, oh, but I'm too old, or, oh, but grammar or whatever, like, just stop. Like, just stop. That's all I'll say yeah. to that right now.
Yeah. I think it's basic etiquette. And I kind of, when I heard you saying, excuse me, this is how we, you know, this is how we handle pronouns, this is how we handle a name change, this is how, whatever. It does seem to me to be like kind of basic etiquette training for a a social situation that it did exist in the past, but wasn't maybe written down in our etiquette books or our Miss Manners from, you know, 100 years ago, right? So even though there is precedent for how we address somebody who's changing something or who is going through a change themselves, it hasn't gotten the attention that maybe it should have at the time. And so we're having to do this work of like catching up and being like, no, you know, trans people have been here for 100 years. It's just not in the etiquette book. So let's like reteach the etiquette, right? Like, let's reexamine how do we approach that? So,
yeah. And that's not an easy program because that can take 6 to 12 months, depending on like how quickly things are moving along. Because like one of the first steps is that, you know, someone in HR serves as basically like a project manager, and I give them a whole list of questions. And I'm like, you need to meet separately with each department, and you need to follow these specific rabbit holes all the way down to know ahead of time how this one little change is going to impact a bunch of people and their day to day. So everyone is clear on who's responsible for which pieces, et cetera. Yeah. Like all of that stuff needs to be figured out so you can have a game plan for it. But again, not every place wants to do that work. And, you know, it's also a hefty price tag. And, you know, me being me, I'm trying to make it as accessible as possible. So like I've been working on other ways that people could buy the stuff to try to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. But honestly, there's still going to be certain things that it's just going to be best to bring me in for. So like you can get fairly far on your own, but you're still going to need to bring me in for like the actual training and stuff, and also like consulting hours. But you want to do this right and then not have to worry about it for a while, so that any additional tweaks in the future, which are going to happen, because like now we tend to say trans, non-binary, and gender expansive versus trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming for a few different reasons. But you know, like, but then it's so much easier to make those changes because you've already done the work of like identifying all of this stuff. And yeah, it does make a difference because again, if you're trying to attract that talent, you need to have these things in place because allies are also going to be interested in seeing and what you're doing and want that aligned for their values too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you said, you know, employee attrition, you know, you don't want to be investing in folks who are just going to leave because you're doing it haphazardly or not prioritizing the right things or not communicating well about it. If you're going to, and you know, investing in your employees is obviously investing in your long-term growth and well-being as a company. So,
yeah. But there's also fear because I'd say I tend to get companies and organizations that realize they need to do this work, but there's a lot of fear of like, backlash of number one, not doing it right, not implementing these things correctly, or because people are like, oh, woke culture and whatever, and saying whatever they need to say about it. But it's like, you know, if you've committed this company or this workplace, whatever, to specific values, are you living them out by living in this fear? Because maybe it is going to shake some people out, but maybe they needed to go so that the right people who do believe and align with those values can come in.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. It's that if you're a company that's considering this kind of training, then clearly somewhere in there, someone cares about hopefully inclusivity, diversity, you know, communication across differences, those kinds of things. And so if folks are in the company that are not able to lean into that for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's not the space for them, even if it's been the space for them for the past 20 years, if we're making a change, we're making a change, you know. But it is hard and it is frightening, I think, for a lot of folks. I think that's important to carry or lift up.
Yeah. 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 And making sure these things are intersectional, like you were talking about, like neurodivergence and the overlap with the LGBTQ plus community. And so also having like C-suite on board, because if C-suite also isn't taking this seriously and they're not also modeling this stuff, like sharing and asking of pronouns, changing their email signatures, literally, physically, you can see them attending either through Zoom or in person, that they're taking these seriously, they're taking notes, they're participating. I mean, that's like another way that this could fall apart too, is if if they're not also like on board with this and understanding the importance.
I agree. Employees need to see upper management being highly invested for them to take it seriously, because we've all got so many things on our plate. It's easy to look at the short term instead of thinking long term. But if you see your manager and their manager in that meeting, you're going to pay attention. So I think that's an important point. Can you let folks know where people can find you, hire you, learn about, you know, all the stuff you do?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to find me is to go to hicharlieocean.com, like hi, like hello to somebody, not hi, like a play on living in the Mile High City or something else related to being in Colorado and things being legal. But yeah, that's probably the easiest way. And almost everywhere, including LinkedIn and Instagram, where I spend the most time, it's Hi Charlie Ocean.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And there'll be links down below, folks. So please go check them out. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I've been really looking forward to this. So thank you for the honor. And it's been wonderful. Yeah, to just connect and get to meet you. So thank you.
Same. Thank you so much for joining us on the Neurodiverging podcast today. This was part one of our two-part interview with Charlie Ocean. So tune in next week for our second part, where we'll be talking more about Charlie and I together are talking more about our understandings of what it means to be neuroqueer, what it means to have queer or trans identities that intersect in interesting ways with our neurodivergence. And I hope you'll return for that part two. It was a really cool conversation, and I think you'll really like it. Please remember, we are all in this together.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.